Today on Off Mic, we continue our election coverage with discussions with three candidates running in the Democratic primary for the 1st Congressional District seat, Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr., Indiana State Representative Mata Candelaria Reardon, and North Township Trustee Frank Mervan. What are the issues they want to tackle if voters send them to Washington, D.C. in January? And what's left for their campaigns with less than 2 weeks to go for the primary? All this on Off Mic. Well, welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're a little more than a week away from the primary election day on Tuesday, June 2nd. Yesterday was the last day to register to vote by mail. Perhaps the biggest race on the ballot in Northwest Indiana is the race for the 1st Congressional District House seat, now held by the retiring Congressman Peter J. Visclosky. There are 20 candidates running for this seat. Historically, the congressional seat has been held by Democrats. A Republican hasn't won this seat since the 1920s. Lakeshore Public Radio has been bringing you interviews with many of the candidates on Off Mic and on Regionally Speaking with Chris Nolte. Today, we hear from the only three Democratic candidates who are current office holders, North Township Trustee Frank Mervan, Indiana State Representative Mata Candelaria Reardon, and Hammond, Indiana Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. We start with Mayor McDermott, who joins us by phone. Mayor, welcome to Off Mic.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Well, let me ask you this, starting off. You started off your campaign near the beginning of the year, then the pandemic hit. How has it affected your ability to get your message out?
Well, technically, I started my campaign the day Congressman Visclosky announced his retirement, which was early November. So we had November and December of normal campaigning, January, obviously, normal campaigning. And obviously, very intense campaigning. And then February, obviously, we're still going normal. And then in March, I had a full calendar of events. I had fundraisers. I had actual huge fundraiser, my St. Patrick's Day fundraiser. And when the lockdown went into place, we lost everything that we had planned to do between then and May 5th, which originally was Election Day. So basically, we had to pivot as a campaign and go from a heavy, travel, around Northwest Indiana and shaking hands and seeing people face to face to online, over the radio, a lot of TV online, Facebook Live, that kind of stuff. And quite frankly, as mayor of Hammond, I had to focus on my job instead of political events and politicking like I would normally do running for office. I'm completely focused on being the mayor and trying to get Hammond and our 81,000 residents out of this situation with as low an infection rate as possible and as few fatalities as possible.
Well, that kind of was my next question. As the mayor of Northwest Indiana's largest city by population, you've had to turn away your attention from your campaign to deal with the pandemic in your city. Has that been a positive for you or a negative?
Well, obviously it's a negative because it's a pandemic, and it's a negative because over 500 residents of Hammond have been infected with it, 15 fatalities due to the COVID-19 epidemic in Hammond alone. So it's never a positive. But if you're talking about campaigning, I think the best thing that I could do in the situation that we were dealt with in mid-March, the best thing I could have done was show Northwest Indiana how good of a mayor I am. And that's really what I focused on instead of being political, instead of putting on PPE and taking pictures with nurses and taking pictures with firemen. Instead, I focused on being a good mayor and running my city well during an unprecedented pandemic. And quite frankly, I think Hammond residents really appreciated what we've done. I've had a coronavirus task force meeting aired weekly since the outbreak happened, and we're keeping our residents informed. And I'm in regular communication with public safety and with the hospitals and with medical professionals. And I think given the situation, we've done well so far, and we're not done yet, by the way. I still am the mayor, regardless of how June 2nd turns out, and I still have a lot of work to do to get through this situation safely.
Well, what are your top three campaign issues that you're focusing on?
Well, healthcare is obviously, when you think about to 30 million Americans that have lost their jobs recently, and how I bet you two-thirds of the Americans that lost their jobs relied on their employer for their health care benefits. We're in a crisis, a health care crisis, in a pandemic, and now a bunch of people have lost their jobs and their health insurance. And I just can't see how we're the best country in the world, and people from all over the world want to live here. And then when you get here, it's nearly impossible unless you're wealthy or you got a good job to get health care. And that's got to be changed. And that's something that I'm going to focus on as Northwest Indiana's next congressman, is a public option where if you have great health care and you like your health care, you don't have to go to a government plan. But if you don't have health care, let's say you work at a fast food place or you have a part-time job, but you still want to get health care, there should be an affordable government health care plan that's offered that gives you reasonable co-pays, reasonable deductibles, and it should be funded through the government, you know, as a safety net. That's what I believe in. Jobs is also something I believe a lot in. $900 million in new economic development into the city of Hammond while I've been mayor. $900 million. Obviously, investing in America. We need to rebuild our cities and our infrastructure across the country. And, look at what's going on with the Lakeshore right now. And no help from the federal government, no help from the state government, and the effects of climate change. And, in Hammond, we've done our part to flatten the curve of our carbon footprint, which is something we need to flatten the curve on also. We've focused on flattening the curve with infection rates. I want to flatten the curve on our carbon footprint. And we've done that in Hammond. And I think I can take the same can-do attitude I've had as mayor, and I think it works well in Washington, D.C.
Well, let me ask you this, Mayor. The pandemic continues to dominate our everyday lives. Are there any issues that you hope to tackle in Congress if you should win that maybe weren't an issue just a few months ago before coronavirus arrived?
Well, there's something that is near and dear to my heart. Is, first off, one thing that I really want to focus on that's been a problem for the region, it's been a problem for the Chicago area, is something that I think that Congress is the only body that could do this too, is doing something about blocked train crossing. I started a train crossing task force when I was president of NERPC, and this task force met for well over a year. We had senators testify, we had congressmen testify, we had train executives testify, and what we learned was only Congress can pass a law that says it is illegal to block a train intersection for more than 15 minutes. And that's something I want to do as your congressman, and it really will help Northwest Indiana. It really will help the Chicagoland area. And there's no excuse for a train that's driving through a city to block an intersection or multiple intersections for hours at a time. It's the equivalent of, let's say, a Southwest airline wants to park in the middle of 8094 and leave their airplane sitting right there. It makes no sense. And if there's pressure from Congress, put on these rail line companies to not do that, they'll figure out how to not do it. But right now, there's no pressure. And that's something that's near and dear to my heart. That's something that rings in Northwest Indiana, by the way, because we've all sat there watching a blocked train crossing for hours at a time. It's unnecessary and it's ridiculous. And that's something I want to focus on.
Mayor, there's been a lot of back and forth with President Donald Trump over whether states are taking too long to reopen. Where do you stand on this issue?
I think that there's good arguments to be made on both sides. Okay. That we were told initially we need to flatten the curve. We don't want to overload our healthcare system. We don't want to overload the ERs so they have to make life and death decisions about who gets to use a respirator and who doesn't get to use a respirator. And we did that, by the way. We went in mid-March, all of us locked down across the United States of America. We devastated our economy, but we flattened the curve. And we could have saved, tens of thousands of extra lives by doing what we did. However, here we are with a ruined economy, 30 million Americans applying for unemployment, and the answer is not to stay at home and hide in our basement. That's not the American way, Michael. The answer is we need to be smart enough to be able to do both right now. We flatten the curve, so let's get out there and try to help fix our economy. And I'm not saying go back to the old ways and shake hands and hug each other and get in each other's space. We have to still, use what we've learned about social distancing, about wearing masks in public, about avoiding unnecessary touching and not touching our face. We still have to do that stuff, but we also have to go to work, Michael, because there's many Americans right now that don't know how they're going to pay for their next round of groceries. That's unacceptable.
Mayor, I've got to ask you this. Last week we had on the on our show the head of Everybody Counts, which assists people with disabilities. They're based at Merrillville, non-for-profit. They sent out a survey to all the candidates running for this congressional seat. They said you are one of the candidates who didn't respond to their survey. Is there a reason for that?
I'm not really aware of what you're talking about. I'll be honest with you. I know about Everybody Counts, and we work with disability groups all the time. For instance, just recently, we had a deal we worked out with an association for Hammond residents that couldn't hear, for deaf individuals, and how they didn't feel like they were being able to participate in our coronavirus task force meetings because they didn't have an interpreter there. So we went out and we got an interpreter and we put it right there on the coronavirus task force meeting. So Everybody Counts, though. I've had, scuffles in the past where, they make valid arguments about old buildings. And, I agree, like the Hammond Civic Center, for instance, was built in 1940. And back when they built buildings like the Hammond Civic Center, they were not built to accommodate wheelchairs. They were not built to accommodate things of that nature. And we've had scrapes in the past about issues like that. So I'm not sure about their questionnaire. I'm not sure I even got that, to be honest with you.
Okay. I do have to ask you this. Last January, federal investigators subpoenaed records from Hammond City Hall. Is there anything you can say about this issue?
We are a keeper of records at Hammond City Hall. There's thousands of employees, or thousands of contractors that go through Hammond City Hall, and they do things like demolitions, and they do other jobs like environmental jobs and things of that nature. And sometimes, 15 times a year, the feds come over to us. We have a great relationship with them. They say, can you give us records on this, this, and this? And we say, sure, here you go. And then it's verified from us. So I can tell you that it's not the first time that the federal government's received records from the city of Hammond or from any other type of government for the record, and it's not the last time. That's how they prove their cases. But I can tell you this, it had absolutely nothing to do with me, had absolutely nothing to do with my administration, had absolutely nothing to do with anybody that works for me. It has to do with one of their investigations, and they want to get records. And I don't know why it was on the front page of the paper, because it's sort of a routine thing, but had nothing to do with the city of Hammond or the city of Hammond's administration at all. By the way, I was asked tons of questions about what they're looking for. That's not my style. I'm not going to ruin the Fed's case and go talk it out of school. And I certainly don't want to get crossed with the federal government myself. So I don't want to ruin any type of investigation they have by blabbing publicly about what they're looking for. I know what they're looking for, but it's not my place to say it. It's not my investigation. So ask the Fed, Mike.
Fair enough. Let me ask you this. Endorsements are very important to any candidate running for office. And I know you've had a few that have backed your candidacy. Off the top of your head, can you name just a few of the groups that have endorsed your candidacy for Congress? And what do those endorsements mean to you?
I've had so many, it's hard to go off the top of my head. Northwest Indiana Building Trades, right? Operating Engineers Local 150, Operating Engineers Local 399, Iron Workers 395, a ton of elected officials, Mayor Dave Uren from Crown Point, Mayor Brian Snedeker from Hobart, Mayor Bill Carroll from Lake Station, fire departments across Northwest Indiana, including Hammond, East Chicago, Portage, Chesterton, Valparaiso. I mean, it means a lot to me because you have workers that believe in you, people like firemen and police officers, FOPs that believe in you enough to come out in a crowded primary and say, this is our person. We believe this person will represent us well in Washington, D.C. And it gives the voters an indication of the types of support that you're getting.
Mayor, let me ask you this. You're very active on social media. Some say almost Trump-like. Do you see yourself changing that if you're elected to Congress?
No. I used social media before the president came around, by the way. I used social media to communicate with my residents and to tell people how I feel about certain issues, and I don't plan to change that at all. I think that's a good thing, by the way. Most people, before I ran for office and I talked to them about what they want to see in elected officials, they say, I want to see somebody that's real. I want to see somebody that's honest, somebody that's not trying to, paint themselves as perfect at all times. And that's who I am. And I put out a lot of stuff and it gets a lot of action. But I tell you what, sometimes I make mistakes. I acknowledge that. I'm not perfect. Sometimes I put stuff out that pisses people off. But sometimes I put stuff out that just catches fire because people didn't know that that's how government worked. And they appreciate honesty and transparency from elected officials like myself. So, no, I don't want to change that. I think it's part of the reason I'm running for Congress, and it's part of the reason I'm, you know, one of the front runners.
Mayor, what separates you from the other candidates who are running for Congress, for First District Congress?
It's experience. I mean, I know you have a state rep coming on to speak shortly, and I know you have a township trustee that's coming on shortly, and the rest of the candidates have never held elected office. But, you know, I hear about supporting the unions. I've done it. I've supported hundreds of union jobs since I've been mayor. I hear about economic development. I've done it. I've raised $900 million in new economic development in the city of Hammond since I've been mayor. I hear a lot about, oh, I want to help the veterans. I am a veteran. I've spent 6 years in the United States Navy, four years and 3 months underwater on a fast-attack nuclear-powered submarine. I want to help with the climate change. We've done that in Hammond. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm the only candidate in the race that has the experience and has actually done the things they're talking about. Like one of my campaign commercials says, would you ever get on an airplane with somebody that's never flown before? Like you walk on an airplane and your pilot says, you know, this is my first flight. I've read a lot about it. I've done a lot of simulators, but I've actually never flown before. How comfortable would you feel walking on that airplane, Michael? I wouldn't feel comfortable. I want somebody that's flown hundreds of times and done it, and it's like the back of their hand. And that's what you're getting if you elect Tom McDermott. I've done it. I've proven to you through my actions what I can do, and if I get to Washington, I'll take it to a higher level. Everybody else, we're flying on an airplane with a pilot that's never flown before.
Well, here's my last question. We're about 11, 12 days out from the election. What are you doing between now and then to get your message out?
Well, doing a lot of what I'm doing right now. This is my third interview this morning talking with you. And obviously, you do a lot of Zoom, a lot more. I didn't even know what Zoom was before March 1st. So doing a lot of Zoom. We're doing a lot of talking to people. You know, I can't really even get together in groups right now because in Lake County, you're limited to 25 people or less. So you can't really have campaign rallies or anything like that. So we're doing a lot of phone calls, a lot of Zoom meetings, a lot of social media stuff. Obviously, a lot of mail, TV commercials, things of that nature. But voting starts on Tuesday. So, you know, we have 11 different locations in Lake County to vote at, to vote from. You got 5 different locations in Porter County and then 1 in LaPorte County. And that starts Tuesday, right after Memorial Day weekend.
Well, Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. is a Democrat candidate for U.S. Congress. Mayor, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
My pleasure, Michael. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. And we'll be back with more Off Mic.
A programming note from Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Governor Eric Holcomb will provide updates on COVID-19 and its impact to the Hoosier State every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 1:30 in the afternoon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Tuesdays and Thursdays will be reserved for emergency updates regarding COVID-19 as needed by the governor. You can also watch the press conferences on our sister station, Lakeshore PBS, or on Facebook. Search for Lakeshore Public Radio.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
There's more ways to listen to Lakeshore Public Radio than just 89.1 FM. You can get Lakeshore Public Radio on the go at your convenience with NPR One. The free app is available via iTunes, Google Play, and Windows App Stores. When you download NPR One, select WLPR as your local station and start listening. NPR One will customize the stories and content from Lakeshore Public Radio and NPR based on what you listen to, share, and save. It's public radio made personal.
We have Brendan and Carrie here from Clancy's Public House out of Portage.
We got Chris here joining us from Gady's Chocolates and Ice Cream out of Lansing. So we're going to have Nick from Albano's on from Valparaiso. And they just opened up a place maybe 6 months ago in the mall called the Pita Stop. It's very unique. We got the 18th Street Brewery in.
Let's eat with Chef Nick every Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're continuing our election coverage with discussions with three candidates, all currently elected officials, who are running in the Democratic primary for the first congressional district seat, now held by the retiring Peter J. Viskolaski. We just heard from Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. Now we are joined by phone by North Township Trustee Frank Marvan. Frank, thank you for joining us here on Off Mic.
Thank you for the opportunity, Michael. This is a great chance to be able to talk about who I am and my vision for Northwest Indiana and be able to talk about critical issues that are faced, that we're all faced with currently.
Well, let me ask you this. You started off your campaign similar to Mayor McDermott late last fall, and then the pandemic hit. How has that affected your ability to get your message out?
Well, the first and foremost, you know, as a North Township trustee, the number one focus I have is being able to help crisis and being able to help the 180,000 people that I represent. And so I represent Hammond, Whiting, East Chicago, Highland, and Munster. And what I consistently do every day is help stabilize people's homes who face financial crises. And when this pandemic hit, the first thing we needed to do is make sure people had access to health care and that we were protecting our most vulnerable population. And so politicking went to the wayside because my number one mission is to make sure that I am central and located and that my office has the mission to make sure that we take care of people. We were able to work with the American Red Cross, be able to have blood drives. We worked with Catholic Charities and the Northwest Indiana Federation. The Northwest Food Bank. We were able to get over 1,000 senior citizens and disabled people food. And ultimately, we were taking people who were who were clogged up in the unemployment system and had no aid in the service industry and employees who lost their jobs. The North Township Trustee's Office were able to stabilize with making sure that they had the resources to make sure they had rent and food and utilities paid for. So since the pandemic started about mid-March, we've been in full action making sure that we're doing our due diligence to protect and stabilize homes in Hammond, Whiting, East Chicago, Highland, and Munster, because it was impacted by everyone.
Well, let me ask you this. As a township trustee for a large township, North Township, you've had to turn your attention away from your campaign to deal with the pandemic. Has that been a positive for you or a negative?
It's been a positive. It's been a positive because my service first is to make sure that you take care of people. Something that we were able to accomplish that we started 5 years ago was in the city of Gary, we had an organization that was five county wide. It was called the NISA organization, the Northwest Indiana Security and Sharing Alliance. And that started with the disaster in 2008 when the U.S. District Attorney's Office, David Kapp, brought U.S. Steel, BP Amoco together and all the emergency management agencies. And what we did is we formed a coalition of public and private partnerships to make sure that we were prepared for a disaster. And so for 5 years, we had drills, tabletop drills. We worked together. We tore down silos. And we made sure that we were prepared. And we were able to put the District 1 hospital district that is from five counties, 17 districts, at the Gary Airport to be able to distribute and raise PPE, protective equipment, and ventilators, and goods for our healthcare professionals. And so what this did is it was able to allow us to help the most amount of people and to be able to highlight the fact that we will have an incident command center at the Gary Airport that we helped put together. That's a $10 million investment. But ultimately, you know, my job comes first. And the ability to serve individuals and to make sure that they have access to food, to make sure that we are creating coalitions and collaborations that we're getting. There were 34 ventilators that were brought into the NISA headquarters that we were able to distribute to the 17 hospitals, which were able to give to a relief for those hospitals to make sure that they had the ventilators for the patients who needed them. And so You know, we talked to infectious disease doctors, and we got the message out on how you can avoid, best avoid the issue, and we've updated the public. So ultimately, there is a separation between running for Congress and doing my duty as a North Township trustee. And I believe during this time, my number one focus, as I consistently have said, was to make sure that the 180,000 people that I represent within North Township, we did that to the utmost of our ability.
Township Trustee Marvan, what are your top three campaign issues you're running on for Congress?
Well, we obviously have to be prepared for the pandemic, and we obviously have to be able to put a commission together that is making sure that we are prepared going forward. And what that looks like on the health side and with the CDC, we have to be able to end arguments among us about science. And I'm a firm believer that the CDC and our ability to make sure that we overcome this and any future reemergence of the virus, that we're able to be prepared. So that goes directly into healthcare, making sure that what we do is we realize that the inadequacies within our healthcare system played a role in the number of people who were infected because, simply, those with certain medical conditions, diabetes, COPD, any compromised medical conditions you were at a higher risk. So what that means to me is we need to focus on healthcare. We need to make sure that as a country and as Northwest Indiana, we have our most vulnerable, that they have access to healthcare. Short term, I have consistently said and have always said we need to have a public option that you can buy into. And if you are a union member, if you're a teacher, a steel worker, a teamster, and you've given up pay increases for the health care that you have, we want you to keep that. What we need to do as a nation, as a congressman, what I will do is make sure that we uplift access to health care, and the federal Medicare policies are equivalent to the private policies. And when we do that, then we'll have equity within our health care system. And, you know, not to go too far off the woods, but it is going to prove that people in minority communities were at risk, and studies have shown and outcomes have shown that there's less access to health care in those communities, and people who are living in poverty do not have access to health care. We've got to change that because it's now a health risk to our entire nation, and we must make sure that our nation and Northwest Indiana has access to health care. Secondly, mm-hmm. I want to also, so that's the first one. Secondly, what is extremely important is making sure we get our manufacturing base up and running. So a lot of the equipment that we needed, we had to be able to get overseas from China, from other countries. That was masked down. What that has educated me in the economics is we've got to be able to manufacture those products in-house so we're not reliant on a separate country, to bring in those goods and services. We must be able to increase our manufacturing base here in Northwest Indiana and be able to provide them an economy and a market for those goods. And then the other thing that is vital, I have been endorsed by Congressman Vislowski, the outgoing retiring congressman, and the United Steelworkers. And I bring that up because we must be able to invest in an infrastructure bill that gets our economy up and going. And when we replace roads and bridges, and, you know, it's very topical in Michigan right now, in dams, making sure that we have the Buy American provision in place that utilizes our steel industry, to make sure that when we are investing in our roads and bridges and infrastructure, that we're using the American steel with public tax dollars to invest in ourselves, to invest in America, to be able to make those changes. And then third, I want to make sure, you know, when we take care of the economy, when we take care of the health crisis, that we are focused on education and that we are making sure that public dollars are going towards public education. We do what we can as a federal government to make sure our teachers are appreciated and they receive the salaries that they deserve. I've been endorsed by the American Federation of Teachers, which is the teachers union, and the educators of Hammond and East Chicago and Gary, and also other schools, 10 different school districts within Northwest Indiana. And I earned that endorsement by working first hand in hand with the educators to make sure we're removing obstacles. And I want to make sure that for-profit charter schools, we put an end to that so that we're not consistently having referendums to because we're chasing dollars that are going to private for-profit schools. That must end.
You know, the Trustee Marvan, with the pandemic continuing to dominate our every lives, are there any issues that you hope to tackle in Congress, if you should win, that maybe weren't an issue just a few months ago before the coronavirus arrived?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, it's going to be getting our economy back on track. Things were humming along. And so I, as the North Township trustee, have consistently for 15 years sat at a table or across the desk from people who have uncertainty and desperation in their eyes. You know, we have an unemployment rate at 15.6%, highest since the Great Depression. And so what we must do is make sure, and as a member of Congress, what I'm going to do is focus on making sure we have job training, focus on making sure that the safety net that we have created doesn't de-incentivize individuals to, and making sure that we have not only a safety net, but what I have realized is you have to be able to teach people how to fish so they feed themselves for a lifetime. We have got to get people back into the workforce. And as a member of Congress, I am going to focus on and ensure that people are getting back to work. We're increasing our manufacturing base. And also, tying that in together, we have redefined how workers work. The Ford plant, Lear Seating, those manufacturing plants, people are very close to each other. The steel mills, when there's a maintenance crew that goes out in the steel mills, they're in one truck. They work in close quarters. We have to make sure if there are industries that are essential and that they're back to work, that we are protecting essential workers, that we're making sure that companies are providing standard of operations that protect workers and that they have the proper equipment and that the standards of operations are protecting the workers and their families. And how you do that is you work with OSHA to be able to protect workers under this new environment with the pandemic, to be able to go forward. Because it has, like you said, Michael, it's changed our country probably forever, and we have to be able to adapt and protect our workers. What I believe has happened is the pendulum has shifted in our country from corporations and businesses to workers, healthcare providers, grocery store workers, all of these individuals who literally risk their lives to provide for us. Now they need to be able to be protected. And as a member of Congress, that is what I'm going to focus on.
Trustee Marvan, there's been a lot of back and forth with President Donald Trump over whether states are taking too long to reopen from the coronavirus. Where do you stand on that issue?
I stand with safety first. I believe that Governor Holcomb has a practical, common sense approach to what needs to be done. We cannot risk the health of ourselves and our families and the evolution of the of what this virus can do. 90,000 people have perished because of it. I want to make sure that my family is safe. I want to make sure that the second wave of the Kawasaki disease that's being discovered in children where it attacks their organs, that we're protecting our kids. And on the same note, as the North Township trustee, I understand that phases 2 and 3 and 4 are necessary, and we have to get our economy back on track because we have to be able to work. We have to be able to make sure that people can pay for their rent, pay for their mortgages. Absolutely go and ensure that we are taking care of our economy and working what gets America back to work. I'm sorry for the distraction. I was driving and there was a traffic jam on 8094. Just real life. the life of a candidate trying to do an interview as you're going. But I know I'm making you laugh, but it's real. I almost ended up in a ditch there for a second.
We don't want to be responsible for that.
Yes. So now there's going to be a law. You can't interview, you can't text, and you can't call on the phone. And I'm a passenger, but there was just a moment of fear that I had.
Well, let me ask. Can I ask you this?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
That you do talk about safety and reopening the state, but there was some pushback you received when you reopened the golf course that the township runs during the pandemic. Any thoughts on why did you reopen that golf course so early?
Sure. First of all, that was political, and it was a political stunt by a candidate who has found out that he has maximized where he's at, and he has a high a high ability of people who dislike him in the county and the way that he approaches things. So first and foremost, it was political. Secondly, the golf courses were always open. The governor of Indiana allowed them to be open. They never closed. But you have to be responsible, and I have consistently been someone who has ran Wicker Park, which is a destination, and we had the walking trail open, and we did it right. We separated golfers. We made sure that we tried it for 12 hours. And ultimately, I decided after that that it was the best thing to do to make sure we closed it. And that same candidate touted how he was going to have Snoop Dogg as a concert and have tens of thousands of people there in the middle of June and July. And he just recently canceled that because he knew that it was politically advantageous for him to run around saying, I have Snoop Dogg, when he was double booked and it probably wasn't true and people had bought tickets. And now he has to reimburse them. So he avoided that debacle that his city had by saying Snoop Dogg's coming to town, come look at me, when in fact he wasn't. And so for this gentleman to talk about public safety when he is running around talking about Festival of Lakes, it is a it really is a schizophrenic approach towards public safety. I consistently have stood with the people, the safety. I was in the emergency rooms. I talked to the physicians who were infectious disease doctors, and we did everything and still are doing everything we can to protect individuals. We've passed out 15,000 masks that we were able to provide for people who are vulnerable. We were able to get food to over 1,000 people. We worked in conjunction with Catholic Charities, the Calumet Township Trustee, and the Northwest Indiana Food Bank, and over 200 people are receiving food every 2 weeks to make sure that those most vulnerable individuals, the seniors and disabled who can't leave their homes, are making sure they're nourished. So it's laughable that this gentleman is talking to me about protecting people.
Trustee Marvan, my last question is, we're about 10 to 11 days out from the primary election. What are you doing between now and then to get your message out?
Well, as you mentioned, the pandemic has changed the way that we campaign. And so we've been doing Zooms. Yesterday, we were able to do a very productive Zoom with the United Steelworkers International, where thousands of people were able to view that. Congressman Vislowski joined us. But my main message now is to be able to do these interviews. We are slowly doing what we can to be able to talk to people and be protective about it and wear masks. We have mailers going out. We have TV commercials. You know, the most important thing is everyone's talking about endorsements, but the most important endorsement that you can have is the voters. And I want voters to be inspired to vote for me about the work that I have done. I want the people of all of Northwest Indiana to believe that there is a greater good that we can come together. I don't believe that voters and elected officials should be intimidated or rolled over or scared to vote for someone. My whole campaign has been positive, and I want people to be inspired that when we come together and advocate for workers, when we advocate for jobs, when we advocate for access to healthcare, and people talk about, you know, I found it laughable in the interview with the last gentleman who was just on, who was saying healthcare is important. The first thing he did, the very first thing he did, was close his city health department. And he almost lost his job over it because he turned his back on the most vulnerable. So when that individual looks you in the eye and says healthcare is important to you, say, well, why did you close order of action? Because you don't care about access to health when you do something like that. I have consistently worked with federally qualified health centers to make sure that all individuals in my community and in the city of Hammond have access to healthcare. I'm Frank J. Mervan. I'm a candidate for U.S. Congress. If you like what I have to say, please go to my Facebook page, Mervan for Congress. I need your vote, and I want you to be inspired.
Well, Frank Mervan is trustee for North Township. He's a candidate in the Democratic primary for the 1st Congressional District race. Trustee Mervan, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
Michael, I thank you for the opportunity. All the voters, be safe. And to our veterans for this Memorial Day weekend, I did not serve, but I've served you for 15 years. I thank you for what your service has been for our country. God bless you. And God bless America. And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. And we'll be back with more Off Mic.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Indiana will enter stage 3 of its plan to reopen a couple days early. I'm Matt Pelser. Next time on All In, we'll catch up on the week's news, including a well-known Republican challenger to Attorney General Curtis Hill. Plus, the Indiana Chamber of Commerce wants Indiana to join more than half of all other states in adopting a workshare program. And a popular Indianapolis convention says, not this year. Join us. Join us every day at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're continuing our election coverage with discussions with three candidates who are currently elected officials who are running in the Democratic primary for first congressional district seat, now held by the retiring Peter J. Visclaski. We are now joined by Indiana State Representative Mata Candelaria Reardon. She joins us by phone. Welcome to Off Mic, Representative Reardon.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me ask you this. You started off your campaign near the late fall. Then the pandemic hit. How has that affected your ability to get your message out?
Well, you know, Michael, thankfully, we have we are living in times of strong technology, and we've been able to do it through the support of technology. We've been reaching out to our voters on our digital platforms, on through their mailboxes, the good old-fashioned way, and certainly through, you know, person-to-person phone contact. Those are the ways that we've been able to communicate with our voters.
You know, and as a state representative, you've had to turn your attention away from your campaign to deal with the pandemic on a state level. Has that been a positive for you or negative?
Well, I mean, every time that I get to serve, I feel like it's a positive. When I get to actually help people and do the things that that inspired me to run, I think that's a positive. It is my job as a representative to do those things, and I embrace it, which is one of the reasons that I got into public service, was to be able to help people. So, you know, I think it's just a challenging time for everybody, and I'm happy to be of use.
If you're elected to Congress, what are your three top campaign issues?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that we often talk about in the region, and certainly, you know, my vision for this is a region that feels connected to their state representative, somebody that they feel connected with, so that together we can address the urgent needs of our region and make sure that, you know, when we're looking at capital improvement plans for local governments, that they align with federal requests. I think making sure this pandemic has certainly shown us a glaring hole in our healthcare system. And, you know, we really need to ensure that all people have access to healthcare. It's something that I'm passionate about. It's something that I've worked on as a state legislator, voting on the increases for access to people through the Healthy Indiana Plan that now provides healthcare to over 400,000 Hoosiers. So those are, you know, some of the things that I think we also have to address our transportation needs and create an interconnected system and finish the things that we've started with regard to the South Shore expansion and the double tracking and efforts at the Gary Airport. Those are all things that are certainly on my list of things that I'd like to do as I move from my role as a state legislator to a federal legislative role.
You know, there's been a lot of back and forth with President Donald Trump over whether states are taking too long to reopen. Where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I think that, you know, we have tried in Indiana, tried to be thoughtful and phase in some of these things over time. And I think that, you know, certainly it would have been my preference to have a little bit more clear leadership. I think that a phase-in plan needs to be publicized more. I think that people are unsure. Are we open? Are we not open? And so I think it should have been delineated and disseminated a little bit more clearly to the people. But here we are.
Representative Reardon, what separates you from the other candidates in this congressional race?
Well, I think the number one thing is that I'm the only candidate in this field with any legislative experience. And in these troubled times, I believe that more than ever, it's important who we elect to the United States Congress. And by experience, I mean I'm the only one in this race that has drafted, authored, and voted on legislation. And I voted on lowering prescription drug prices and testing of the water in our schools for lead. I voted on criminal justice reform and workforce development. So you don't really have to take my word for the kind of legislator that I would be as your congresswoman. You can look at my strong legislative record of fighting for families, unions, and public education.
Let me ask you this. Now, endorsements are very important to any candidate running for office, and you've had a few that have backed your candidacy. Could you just name a few of them who are backing you, who have endorsed you, and what do those endorsements mean to you?
Well, you know, I think that one of the ones that I'm most proud of is the Bold PAC endorsement. I think the Bold PAC is an organization made up of Latino legislators in leadership Latino congressmen and women in the United States Congress. So there's 38 people that want me on their team that believe that I bring value to their team and to the United States Congress. We've gotten endorsements from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, so the union that has, workers on the front line today. These are frontline workers that support me. We've been endorsed by, the Poder PAC. We've been endorsed by AFSCME, Indiana-Kentucky AFSCME, the Smart Transportation Division, which is the Locomotive Engineers. And so we have really, got a good, the Voter Protection Project, whose mission is to support open and fair and honest elections, has chosen my candidacy for that. So I'm very proud of our endorsement. These mean something to me.
Representative Reardon, as a state representative, you've been in the state house now for a number of years. What would you say are some of your one or two top accomplishments that you'd like to speak of?
Well, I think the number one, I would say, is certainly, that expansion of health care to 400,000 Hoosiers through the Healthy Indiana Plan. The other thing is building healthier communities through co-authoring the statewide smoking ban that provides smoke-free restaurants for our communities. I think the other would be the $14 million budget inclusion for the Little Calumet River Flood Control Project and the long-term funding maintenance of that project, a federal project that languished for over 30 years and finally was completed. And now we have the money to maintain it. Often in those multi-jurisdictional projects, it's difficult, certainly, and that's really what caused the flood is the lack of a maintenance plan and a long-term vision for maintaining that. The culverts were full of debris. There were pumps that were not functioning. We had 6,000 homes and businesses displaced in Munster because of it. And so those are the things that I'm most proud of, changing the quality of life so that people don't have to stress out all the time every time it rains.
Representative Reardon, I have to ask you this. Your husband was involved in a project a couple of years ago to bring an incinerator to Gary near an existing charter school. Did his involvement in that project put you in a somewhat uncomfortable position?
Well, so, Michael, again, everybody has always talked about this project as, first of all, I wasn't involved in the project. It is a project that was a recycling facility, not an incinerator or a landfill. So it was a recycling facility. So, I don't know when Democrats started to be opposed to recycling, but I think it's better than digging a hole in the ground. That said, it was not my project. It was in an industrially zoned area, appropriately zoned, appropriately licensed by the state, and all the hoops over the two-year process was followed to locate it where it was. And to say that it was next to a school is, I think, a little disingenuous when the school located where the project was. In fact, got an actual variance to locate where that project was because they were told initially no. So, people are going to believe what they want to believe, but the truth of the matter is that it was a recycling facility so that we don't continue to dig holes in the earth and bury our trash.
Representative Reardon, I do have to ask you this one. You've been involved in a very public issue with Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill. The Indiana Supreme Court suspended Hill's law license for 30 days based on testimony from you and three other women who accused him of groping you at an Indianapolis bar 2 years ago. Has this issue been a distraction for your campaign?
I would just say, Michael, that it's been a distraction for my life, not just for my campaign. When something traumatic happens to you, it certainly becomes a distraction.
Let me ask you this. We're about 11 days out from the election. What are you doing between now and then to get your message out?
Well, we are running television ads. We're up on digital platforms. We are doing direct mail. We are making phone calls. And those are the things that we can do right now. I don't think it's appropriate to go door to door and knock on people's doors during a global pandemic, no matter what phase we're in here of opening. I think it's prudent to continue to keep our distance from each other. And I don't want to put anybody's health at risk for a political campaign, but we are trying to get our message out and ensure that voters know that experience matters. It matters who we send to the United States Congress. You know, one of the things that really pointed that out for me today was this discussion of impeachment. And the mayor was on his radio show today talking about how he still does not believe that impeachment was the right process. And it really showed to me a glaring difference in the role of an executive and the role of somebody in the legislature. We, as you know, in Indiana have a super minority, which means that they do not even need us to have a quorum. And so for me, I really, when the mayor said that this morning, I thought he doesn't understand the legislative process, because it is our responsibility and our job as legislators to show up, to question the majority. In whether the Senate voted on impeachment or not, the House had a responsibility to vote on impeachment and put that vote on the board and see who these elected officials represent truly. Do they represent the people, or do they represent their own interests in their party? That is our responsibility, to question and push forward issues, whether we know the outcome of the vote or not. That is our responsibility as legislators. It's our responsibility to put those questions forward and put them on the board for a vote. Where do you stand on this issue? That vote matters, whether you win it or not.
Well, State Representative Mara Candelaria Reardon is a Democrat running in the 1st Congressional House District race in the primary on June 2nd. Representative Reardon, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And that's going to wrap up our show today. I'd like to thank all our guests today, Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr., North Township Trustee Frank Mervan, and Indiana State Representative Mara Candelaria Reardon. We've got the election coming up on June 2nd, but early voting begins next Tuesday, or this coming up Tuesday, and hopefully people will be able to get out there and vote. You can hear this program again as a podcast by visiting lakeshorepublicradio.org's website. It'll be up in a couple of minutes. We hope you enjoyed the show. We tried to ask several questions. Like I said at the beginning of the show, There are about 20 candidates running for this seat. We've had many of them on Lakeshore Public Radio, whether it's regionally speaking with Chris Nolte or off mic here with me on Lakeshore Public Radio. And it's impossible to have them all on at the same time. But you could hear some of our interviews by going to the website, lakeshorepublicradio.org. So for me, Michael Puente, and our producer, Jose Rodriguez, and the fabulous D. Dotson, and the always grumpy Tom Maloney Jr., want to thank everybody here for helping us put this together, and the candidates. Go out there and vote and exercise the democratic process. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. Memorial Day.